What the hell was that?
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Yeah. Are you there?
We gotta get rid of this kook. I got an idea.
Greatness at its finest.
Welcome to the Rodcast.
Wonder who that could be.
On the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260.
Come on, why you want to play a brother like that?
And hornfm.com.
Is there a problem back there?
Where the Longhorns play and Austin talks sports.
To the Rodcast. You can always be a part of the show. Please do hit us up on the Specs text line. I have not forgotten about you folks on the Specs text line. We're going to address those here in the first segment. After we get done with the rundown, I'm reading texts. I'm addressing texts. So if you hit us up, you got questions, you got comments about some of the topics that we've discussed so far today, hit us up on the Specs text line. I guarantee you we'll address those, okay? All right. You also can hit me up via Twitter. I'm at Rod Babers in the Twitterverse. My man, The Thing, Brian, The Thing, at The Thing Radio. Back there doing his thing, twisting and tweaking the dials. One of the conversations I'm actually going to bring Brian in on, because he had an interesting take about where we were just giving the scouting reports about how the Longhorns performed at the Pro Day. And by the way, it was one of the, I would say, the most high-profile Pro Days for Texas in a really long time. When you think about it, Texas could have six players drafted this year. Now, to give you perspective on that, the last, I would say, the most players Texas football has had drafted in the modern era of the draft, since they reduced it from like 17 rounds or 35 rounds, or what the hell it used to be way back in the day. You know, now it is seven rounds. I think they reduced it to eight, to single digits, for the first time in like the 90s. So since the modern era of the draft, I think the Longhorns, the most players they've had drafted are seven in 2007. I believe that's, I think they had seven in 2007, and they've had six, I think, a couple of times since then, six players in the draft. But if you have Connor Williams drafted, Malik Jefferson, Deshaun Elliott, Houghton Hill, Long Ball Dixon, all right, drafted as well, long balls, if he ends up being drafted, and I think he will, that'll make five. I think Puna at this point, and we were just talking about Puna, he may have, you talked about who earned the most money at the Texas Pro Day, it's very possible it was Puna Ford, because if you look at, because he didn't get invited to the combine, number one. So right there, you know, that he's got a lot to prove because he wasn't invited to the combine. And so all of those tests for him, those testing numbers, that's what sticks for him. He doesn't get a second chance to do it like all the other guys. But he had a 24-inch, he had 24 reps on the bench, 29-inch vertical. He had a 9.3 broad jump, which is top three for defensive tackles among D-tackle times and numbers from the combine. He had a 4.94/5.18 40-yard dash, pretty damn good for a defensive tackle. His three-cone drill, it was 4.47. That would have been the best time for a D-tackle with the combine. The L drill was 7.4. That would have been top five for a D-tackle at the combine. And, you know, you start looking at it, he didn't get invited to the combine for a reason, because people were hating on his height and his size, because he's not even 6 foot. I think he measured in at 5'11". So, you know, they don't like that as a D-tackle. They want a guy with size, but he's got all of these other assets that have really, really helped him. And he's proven now with the drills that not only is he a gamer, because he's got the film out there, all right, to show that he was one of the better D linemen in the country, and it was straight up disrespectful not to invite him to the combine. But now he's got the bowl practices from the Senior Bowl, where he was one of the better D linemen there and really, I think, impressed a lot of scouts. Then he goes, he has the Shrine game even before the Senior Bowl. So there were two Senior Bowls that he actually participated in, and he blew them out of the water in both of those. Now you have the testing, and he tests like one of the most athletic defensive tackles out there, and the film backs it up too. So I think Puna Ford, even though people have said he might go under, I think Puna Ford is going to get drafted sixth or seventh round, but I think he's going to get drafted. And I love what Malcolm Brown, the defensive tackle Malcolm Brown, said about Puna Ford. He said, people who are criticizing his height, they just don't get it. His height is only going to help him in the NFL and cause NFL O-lineman fits. And it's pretty simple. I don't know why people don't see this. It is really simple to me that you can't win the pad level against Puna Ford. He's got such great BGO, ball get off, along with being able to use leverage really well. And he's powerful and he's quick. He's got that explosive burst initially. And he's already low to the ground. If you're a lineman and you're 6'4 and 6'5, whatever a lineman are, and you're trying to get underneath a guy like that who gets off the ball so quickly, you're almost every time pushing him toward where he wants to go. And the reason I want Brian to get on this because Brian is 6'5". Brian is 6'5". Brian is and played football in high school as a – how tall were you in high school?
6'4". I played 6'4", 340 pounds.
And I'm sure you were playing on the O-line.
No, I played nose tackle.
Oh, did you play D-line?
Yeah, I played nose tackle. I didn't like sitting still.
But
I will say this. I practiced a lot offensive line, just game time. I mainly played offense.
So, okay, I'll ask you on the other side then. As a bigger defense lineman, you were way bigger than everybody else. How tough is it for a big guy to get low in a game that's all about pad level?
That was my biggest thing. Is it wasn't a matter of strength. It wasn't a matter of
coaches kept yelling at you about.
It was a matter of being just exactly as you said. Pad level was as those guys had leverage over me every time, and if I didn't get off the ball before them, they had for sure leverage over me.
No question. If you're a defensive lineman, your biggest asset, the biggest, the most important tool in your repertoire. Is BGO, ball get off.
Yeah.
Because whoever wins that ball get off initially, you're going to have a huge advantage. That's what Puna Ford wins initially every time. And then going back to your point about pad level and having a good center of gravity, he's going to win again. That's what Malcolm Brown is saying. He's going to win again because you can't get lower than him. And so I don't understand. And listen, I know it's going to be a tough fit for him, but I think that's one of the things that's going to help him. I agree with Malcolm Brown totally on that. And you brought up a really good point, too, because we're just talking about sports, because I brought up the fact that my man Matt Butler does a really good job analyzing stats on our Longhorn Blitz podcast. You know, we were talking baseball, and he brought up how Jose Altuve also being short, right? That's his thing. It was like, he's too short. He's way too short to be a great hitter in baseball. And that was a big knock on him, and that's why he was a guy that wasn't highly touted or highly sought after. And he had to, sign a small deal and go work out at an open workout to get a platform, to get an opportunity. And now he's arguably the best hitter in baseball. Well, the reason he's the best hitter in baseball is because the focus now in baseball is about launch point. Launch point, right? Everybody wants to get under the baseball, and they want to get air on the baseball because there are so many different basically there are more things that can happen to go right for the offense, for the batter when you're getting the baseball up. All right, then can go wrong. All right, so basically they've decided that you're doing yourself a disadvantage by hitting ground balls and getting on top of the baseball. You want to get under it. That's why home runs are up, and that's why you're starting to see this new philosophy in baseball. But for a guy like Jose Altuve, who's been short his whole life, that's all he's ever focused on is getting under the baseball. But now the culture, the new culture, the new philosophy, the new mentality, that has now bled over into his circumstantial skill set, which is his circumstances just being short. So he's short. He's automatically always underneath the baseball. He starts there. And everybody else has to get there. They had a focus on getting underneath it. He's already there. So it's almost perfect for him. So basically, and there's a great book about this by the author. It's called Ryan Holiday. It's called The Obstacle is the Way. The thing that is your biggest impediment, the thing that is your biggest obstacle will also, if you can overcome it, if you can overcome that obstacle, if you can overcome that impediment, it will often end up leading to your salvation. It'll often end up inspiring your salvation. You'll evolve into a better person by overcoming that obstacle that you have. And for Jose Altuve, it was his height. For Puna Ford, it's going to be his height. But often that obstacle ends up being the salvation for Jose Altuve because he's short underneath the baseball. And me and Brian were talking about that, too, as it relates to other sports. But that's for Puna, that's what's going to help him. And I'm going on a Puna Ford rant here. But I think Puna's going to get drafted, too. And then maybe one of those other guys can get drafted. But I think you could end up having 6 Longhorns get drafted in this draft. I really, truly believe it. And that's the thing about Puna. He's rare. He's going to pick the right team that's willing to utilize him correctly. I call him a bumblebee. Bumblebees aren't supposed to be able to fly. They defy physics, theoretically. That's what some people say. But, they make it happen. And that's Puna. He defies physics. He's not tall. But he is long. A guy that short and stout shouldn't be able to move as quickly in space like he does. They said he did great in what they call the circle drill, where you got to run in a circle and then you got to grab the tennis ball. He's awesome at that. You know what I mean? Because he's got a great center of gravity. So I think he made himself some. I think he was the biggest winner in Texas Pro Day. I do. Yeah, I really do. All right, that's a random rant about Texas football. I don't want to get too deep into that. But you can always hit us up on the Specs text line. You got questions for me about the Texas Pro Day. You got concerns that you want me to address about Texas Pro Day or even Texas football. We'll get into that a little bit later on. We go behind the burners. Curtain Specs text line is 512-337-3776. Let's quickly give you all the headlines that you need to know, and then we'll talk some baseball.
These are the top headlines of the day. It's time for the rundown.
All right, the rundown brought to you by good friends at Top Gun Lawn and Equipment Rentals. TopGun.net is where you find out more about Top Gun Lawn and Equipment Rentals. All right, in action tonight, the Houston Astros will be facing off against the Texas Rangers. Well, not tonight, actually. I want to say the first pitch is in like 15 minutes. So Houston Astros at the Texas Rangers. That is starting off opening day. All 30 teams were supposed to be in action, some texters. On the Specs text line, very vigilant texters on the Specs text line did inform me that the only reason that teams are not playing is because of rain delays. So there are teams that are supposed to be playing, but they're not playing because of rain delay. So I think that the Nationals aren't playing maybe because of a rain delay. And I think maybe there's another team that's not playing because of rain delay. So all 30 teams are supposed to be in action. That's a beautiful thing. First time since 1968. That makes it truly feel like an unofficial holiday for Major League Baseball. So happy opening day to everybody out there. Texas basketball going through hard times right now. And Shaka Smart's job just got a whole lot tougher. They're going to lose. Mo Bamba, of course, he's declaring for the NBA draft. He's going to be a lottery pick. Eric Davis Jr. yesterday announced that he was declaring for the NBA draft. And Kerwin Roach, without hiring an agent, so he does have the option to come back, he is also declaring for the NBA draft. So there's three players right there that, if the situation's right, they're going. Mo Bamba's gone. Eric Davis Jr. is gone. I think Kerwin Roach, if the situation's right, he may leave as well. James Banks announced that he was transferring yesterday along with sophomore guard Jacob Young. Both those guys are transferring from the University of Texas basketball team. And, of course, we know the situation with Andrew Jones getting healthy, and we don't really know how that affects his future basketball career. So there's a lot of attrition on this Texas basketball team, and Shaka Smart has got his hands full already in terms of trying to address the roster issues they have. But we'll get back to some Texas basketball. If anything else breaks, hopefully it doesn't, because everything that's been breaking for Texas basketball in the last few days has been bad news for Texas basketball. Speaking of Texas sports, Texas Relay started yesterday. They're going to be competing all throughout the weekend. That actually is going to be broadcast on Longhorn Network, I believe. So if you're a big track and field fan, you can go check that out. Not a huge fan of watching track and field. The only thing worse than track is field, and it's really tough to watch it on TV. But you can watch the marquee events. 4x400 is always a marquee event. 4x100, 100, 200, that kind of thing. Also in action here tonight, the San Antonio Spurs are going to host the Oklahoma City Thunder. That is going to be big because we don't know the status of LaMarcus Aldridge and that knee contusion, that left knee contusion that he suffered when they lost to the Wizards. And the Spurs have to have this game. They cannot afford to lose any games really down the stretch. Remember, it's only 1.5 games separating them from the Clippers in like that ninth spot being out of playoff contention. So if the Spurs don't have LaMarcus Aldridge, and if he's not 100%, he just won Western Conference Player of the Week, Spurs could be in trouble. Not only, a lot of streaks could end for them, and their famous 20-year playoff streak could end. They got OKC, then they got Houston. They still got to end the season playing New Orleans. And remember, the Clippers are right now still in playoff contention. So when the Spurs play the Clippers, I want to say in like a few days, I want to say they play OKC tonight, they play Houston this weekend, and then they actually go to the Clippers, I believe. They play the Clippers and the Lakers. That actually may be a tough game because the Clippers may be fighting for their playoff lives. Both teams fighting for their playoff lives. So that's going to be big. Last night, Dallas Mavs were at the Lakers, and they lost 103-93. Lakers won that game. Also in basketball news, the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame, they haven't announced it, but it has been announced that they will induct Jason Kidd, Steve Nash, two of the greatest point guards of all time, and Grant Hill is also going into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. For now, that's all I've seen. All right? I know it could be some other ones thrown out there, but for now, that's all I've seen. We'll keep you updated if there are some other names that trickle out. They were informed that they were going to the Hall of Fame, and I think they informed the media, and the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame didn't release, like, they didn't have an email release or anything like that to announce it. Also, the Dallas Stars are at the Minnesota Wild tonight. For you hockey fans out there, and the Houston Open also going on. So a lot of sports across the state of Texas this weekend and today. The Houston Open, which is the premier golf event, PGA event before the Masters in 2 weeks, that is happening at the Golf Club of Houston. Is going to be going on through April 1st. And Justin Rose, Jordan Spieth, and Ricky Fowler are the co-favorites to win the event, followed by Henrik Stenson and Phil Mickelson with best odds to win the Houston Open. We'll get you caught up with the Houston Open and get you a leaderboard update a little bit later on, too, as well. Also, Tony Romo was nominated for an Emmy, so he continues to impress his first season in broadcasting. He's up against Kirk Herbstreit, John Smoltz, Brad Nessler, Gary Danielson, and John Gruden, also thrown in the mix there. And happy birthday to a legendary Lifetime Longhorn and one of the greatest football players to ever walk the planet. Earl Campbell is 62 today. Don't want to forget about that. Here is your leaderboard update for the Houston Open. Lucas Glover is the leader right now at 7-under. He's at 7-under right now. He's the leader. Keith Mitchell is second right now at 6-under. Ricky Fowler in third, tied in third, with Kevin Tway at 5-under. So right now, that's your leaderboard. We'll get you caught up with some of the other scores coming up a little bit later on in the day. All right, that's the rundown brought to you by Top Gun Lawn and Equipment Rentals. TopGun.net is where you find out more about Top Gun Lawn and Equipment Rentals. We're going to get into – there's something the Astros are doing that may end up catching on to Major League Baseball, but once again, it proves the Astros are always ahead of the game, or at least now this Astros team and organization, they want to stay ahead of the game, ahead of the curve. They want to stay ahead of the rest of the league. They're always on the cutting edge. They're always trying to be as innovative as they can, and I think this story proves it again. So we'll talk some Astros. Also, I got good news for Cowboys fans, potentially, and maybe some bad news for Texans fans. We'll sort that out and talk some Texans-Cowboys coming up a little bit later on. Someone says, Aaron Donald's height. This is text line. Specs text line. Hit me up, 512-337-3776. Texter here says, Aaron Donald's height isn't hurting him. I agree. Aaron Donald's height has been an asset to him because he's got great ball get-off and he has great leverage and a great center of gravity. My man CB texted in, says, since 2015, Texas has had only 7 players drafted, 0 in 2014, 5 in 2015, 1 in 2016, and 1 in 2017. And they could have 6 this year if Puna ends up getting drafted. I think you'll have 5. I think Deshaun Elliott, Houghton Hill, Connor Williams, Malik Jefferson. I think Long Ball Dixon gets drafted. He's just too damn good. He really is. Some team that has a luxury of drafting a punter is going to draft Long Ball Dixon. I can guarantee you that. If it doesn't, I'm going to throw a fit. I'm going to throw a grown man temper tantrum because that's ridiculous. That guy, he was the MVP of a bowl game, for God's sakes, as a punter. All right. Anyway, I'm a big fan of Long Ball Dixon, in case you can't tell. But I agree with CB. Texas had tough times in the NFL draft lately. This year could change all that, change that perception. You could have 6 players drafted, maybe 7 if a Chris Warren or a Antoine Davis or an Amonte Foreman or one of those guys ends up being, somebody ends up taking a chance on them, maybe not being a late round draft pick. Someone says, hey, Rod, you were right about the Nationals game. It was postponed due to weather. All right, so all the games anybody who's not playing today, it's only because of rain delay, or they've been postponed because of weather. Thank you. A lot of people hit me up with that. Someone says, Rodcast, best show on the station. I appreciate that, man. I appreciate it. Our man Brian the Thing back there helps as well, man. He's a real MVP. Someone says on the text line, another reason that Derek Johnson didn't make Pro Bowls early in his career was because of the perennial Pro Bowlers like Ray Lewis and others, that even if he had better years than them, it didn't matter. They made it on name recognition. That's a really good point. He definitely had better He made more splash plays later in his career. But you're right. He was still pretty consistent early on as well. I'll give you that. And, yeah, there were a lot of big names. And you make the Pro Bowl on your name, too. I got a text here that may be breaking some news. But I don't want to do that because I don't know if they want me to break that news. But, I might have to break that. I'll confer with them and text back with them in the break to see if I can break that news. It's good news for Longhorn fans. All right. Someone says a Swiss Army knife is always more valuable than a steak knife. We heard in the discussion about Connor Williams, and the NFL scouts are knocking Connor Williams because they don't know if he can play guard or tackle. And I was like, well, can't you flip that and say he can play both? Why does it have to be a negative? Like, you know what? He's going to drop in the draft because we don't know where to play him, guard or tackle. So that means he can play both guard and tackle. Why is that not an asset? You know what I mean? The Cowboys just got to switch tackle in Cameron Fleming. Marcus Martin can play guard and center. Lyle Collins can play tackle and guard. That's why they're one of the best O-lines in the NFL, and they doubled down on their strength, their O-line, by getting guys with position versatility. So in 3 years, when Connor Williams is an NFL veteran, they're going to be saying he's one of the only players in the NFL that can play all five positions on the offensive line. But now it's a negative thing? I don't get that. So I agree with you. Swiss Army knife is always better. And that's going to be because they said he can even play center. They think about playing him at center, too, which is crazy to me. He's never even played center, but that's how athletic they believe he is. Someone says they were lucky enough to watch Earl Campbell play in his prime. God bless you. One of his thighs was bigger than most guys' two legs. This is true. Earl Campbell had to get, and he told me this once before, specially made jeans. They had to make his jeans special for him. He couldn't just go buy jeans because his thighs were too big. The original Thunder thighs. He had to get jeans made for him. That's crazy. He literally burst through the jeans like the Incredible Hulk. It's unbelievable. Like, that guy was just a freak. Someone here on the text line says, how much would it shorten the games to do away with kickoffs? That's a good point. We talked about this to start off the show. The NFL is seriously considering getting rid of kickoffs. Mark Murphy, the president of the Green Bay Packers and on the competition committee, he says if they cannot make that play safer, because it is the most violent play in sports, and players are five times as more likely to get hurt on a kickoff than any other play, and they found that guys are even getting concussions on touchbacks. That's not funny, but that's how crazy. On touchbacks. All right. So it's one of those things where, I think they're going to get rid of the kickoff in like the next 5 years. They're not joking. They're serious about this. They understand how big of a threat this CTE crisis is. So I don't necessarily know if they care about shortening it. They're going to be upset because that was part of their commercial breaks. They would put two commercial breaks around that kickoff, one before and one after. So the networks are going to be really upset about taking away the kickoff. Because they were like, man, I'm trying to put in more commercials. The more commercials we play, the more money we make. So they're going to be upset about that. It would shorten the game, but, the networks are not going to like it. Someone said, I think it'd be interesting if they added that if the ball went all the way out of the back of the end zone on the kickoff, then the offense has to start at the 15. It would encourage teams to kick it through the end zone. Many teams have begun kicking high kicks that don't reach the end zone so they can pin them deeper. You're right, the sky kicks have become very popular. Trying to place it really in an area, kind of a no man's land where you have to return it. But it's so high that you still give your kickoff team time to cover the kick. So, that's a violent play, man. I got three shoulder surgeries in my NFL career, my short NFL career, a little over 5 years. Two of them came on kickoffs trying to bust up the wedge, which is now illegal. So they tried to make that play safer. That's the most violent play in football. Or the kicks are the most violent plays. My other shoulder surgery, a shoulder injury, came on a punt. I was a gunner, and I was going down, diving at some guy returning a kick. Boom, I heard my collarbone snap. You know what I mean? So the kicks are violent, man. You're running full speed. It's like a car collision. Those things are like, they're just car wrecks, man. Little car wrecks on the football field. And, I think the NFL is going to do away with it. And you know what? At this point, there are only like 6 kickoff returns for touchdowns per year. It's more of a burden than a benefit to us. The kickoff return, basically at this point, the kickoff is more like, it's like printed porn or the penny or yellow pages or payphones. It still exists, but we don't need it. We don't need it.
Here's a crazy statistic. You were talking about, being in a car accident, which they actually equate that to. Playing an NFL game is like being in multiple car accidents.
Oh, yes, yeah.
But we were talking about this last week off the air. Last time was the average NFL tackle, if you could harness that kinetic energy and turn it into like electricity,
yes, yeah,
you could light a light bulb for a minute and a half.
I totally believe that. Yeah.
Well, yeah, you've been
I've felt that.
Exactly.
You can hear it on the sideline,
exactly.
And you're like, whoa. I agree with that 100%. Being on the NFL sideline probably been on the college football sideline for major college football programs. It is one of the most violent places. Like, you just witness so much violence and brutality. Yeah, you're right. It's amazing.
To a certain degree, I'm always shocked that someone isn't hurt every play.
The NFL is saying basically somebody is.
Well, yeah, pretty much. I mean, like, yeah, you know, like, taking off a stretcher.
Which is why, that's why they're calling this the Ryan Shazier rule, the new lower your helmet rule for the NFL, because they're saying that Ryan Shazier's spinal injury happened because he lowered his head. But I think it was about the traumatic viewer experience of watching somebody carried out on a stretcher from a football field. Nothing ruins your time. Nothing ruins your watching experience like watching somebody leave that field on a stretcher.
Makes it real.
It makes
it
real.
That's not what we want.
It's even more real than guys leaving with concussions, because concussions, you get carried off the field and it's like, oh, like
any
other
injury. It's a little funny. The guy's a little loopy and walking funny.
A stretcher is okay.
When they take the face mask off?
Right? We need to pray for this guy. I'm going to go pray for him. You know what I mean?
Come on, give us the thumbs up. Give us the thumbs up.
Exactly
give us the
right.
thumbs up.
It's exactly right. And they know moms are watching that, and moms are freaking out. My kid ain't playing football, and they got to change that perception. All right, good text on the Specs text line. Continue to hit us up, 512-337-3776. I'll tell you what the Astros are doing that may change defense in baseball forever, and also we'll get into good news for Cowboys fans, maybe bad news for Texans fans. All that more right here on the broadcast. This is The Horn, 104.9 AM 1260. All right, welcome back to the broadcast. Hit us up on the Specs text line, 512-337-3776. A couple of texters here on the Specs text line. Infertile Myrtle says, I agree with you 100% Rod on the kickoffs, but one of my favorite plays of all time is Shipley's return in 2008, but I'll sacrifice that for health. Oh, yeah. But see, at the college level, maybe they won't get rid of it. Yeah, it'll trickle down. The whole point of this NFL kind of dynamic, radical experiment is that it trickles down to the lower levels. So, yeah, it'll probably trickle down to college. I'm going to miss them, too. Listen, when I play in the NFL, and I gave this number out earlier, the five-year span I played in the league from 2003 to 2007 and a little bit into 2008, there were 76 kickoff returns for touchdowns. In the last 5 years from 2013 to 2017, there have been 32. So, you know what I mean? It's just that we don't even get the kickoff returns like we used to, but you're right. I do remember that Jordan Shipley one. Damn. Yeah, that was nice. Damn, beat that 2018. Think about how dynamic that offense was with Jordan Shipley and Quan Cosby. You realize that Colt McCoy led the team in rushing that year? In rushing attempts, too? We don't realize how good Colt McCoy was. He covered up a lot of ineptitude offensively, but he was just that damn good. Someone, my man CB says, I tweeted out the Skull Brother commercial. Skull Brother! Yeah, my man. That's back when you could advertise, like, cigarettes, and you could advertise like chewing
Four
tobacco.
Four out of five doctors recommend Parliament for your nerves.
Yeah, back in the day. Yeah, he's the original Skull Brother. That is true, Earl Campbell. Josh in Cedar Park says, Doug Free might be the most underrated Swiss Army knife of all time. Doug Free was underrated. Yeah, played guard, played tackle. Good point. Another texter says, a Swiss Army knife is more valuable than a steak knife. It's great until it's time to cut a steak. That I agree with. But you know what? Just pick if you got to cut a steak with a Swiss Army knife, you might as well just pick it up and eat it with your hands. Damn it. You're at that point. All right. Let's talk about the Cowboys real quick. Cowboys, good news for the Cowboys and bad news for the Texans. Here's the good news for the Cowboys. It's being reported that Randy Gregory, remember that guy? Yeah, that Randy Gregory, suspended because he violated the NFL substance abuse policy multiple times. Well, he is prepping to apply for reinstatement, and the reports are he'll likely be reinstated. He's training in California, and that means that the Cowboys could end up getting another dynamic pass rusher on that D-line. Now, we all know Tank Lawrence. He was fantastic, 14 and a half sacks this year. He's a war daddy. David Irving had 7 sacks. They put a second-round tender on him, I believe. So they like David Irving. He can be another war daddy for you. When that guy's healthy, he's extremely disruptive and productive. So you got 2 war daddies on that D-line. You drafted Taco Charlton. Taco Charlton, everybody's crossing their fingers, hoping he works out. He had 3 sacks last year. Tyrone Crawford, of course, is another guy that can rush the passer. You need depth on that D-line. That's what Philadelphia proved. You need to be able to rotate bodies, fresh bodies on that D-line, and guys who can wreak havoc. And now you got DeMarcus Lawrence. You got David Irving, who you can play at D-end or D-tackle. You got Taco Charlton. You got Tyrone Crawford. And you may get back Randy Gregory, who has a really high ceiling as a pass rusher. The average amount of sacks for a Super Bowl participant in the Super Bowl era is 44 sacks. I think the Cowboys had 38 sacks last year, but so did Philly. So Philly and the Dallas Cowboys had the same amount of sacks. What separated Philly from Dallas is that Philly led the NFL in quarterback pressures with 291. All right, so they may not have got to the quarterback every time to actually end up getting the sack, but they had a ton of pressure on the quarterback. And that's what the Cowboys need. So I think it's a really good thing when you start looking at the Cowboys' blueprint to win that they could get multiple pass rushers now in that defensive line. You got DeMarcus Lawrence, franchised him, David Irving. You like Tyrone Crawford, too. Now Randy Gregory, that's just your DNs. You're talking about Malik Collins, you throw him in there as well. I like the way that D-line may be shaping up if Randy Gregory can keep his together. Here's the bad news for the Texans, potentially. I don't know if it's bad news, but Texans fans are viewing it as bad news. It's reported by the NFL Network, actually, reporters. And I want to say that James Palmer was at the league meetings, and he was the one at NFL Network that reported. He said that Bill O'Brien is going to change the offense for Deshaun Watson. Palmer explained, why put in an entirely different offense? He really told me everybody saw what they did with Deshaun this past season, and they're changing things up. It's not even completely put into place yet. They're still putting it all together. And he said the teaching portion of this is going to be the challenge because of Deshaun's specific skill set, that it is so different and so lethal at the same time. But they are changing things up dramatically, is the word that was used, on the offensive side of the ball. And everybody's like, man, that offense was pretty damn good last year in the 5 games where Deshaun Watson, or 6 games Deshaun Watson was a starting quarterback. They actually averaged 39 points per game in that 5-game stretch before he tore his ACL. And he was on pace to lead the NFL in touchdowns. He had 19 at the time. So why change things up? I don't think he's actually changing the offense. I still think you're going to see a lot of the hybridized concepts using a lot of the college concepts. It's going to look like that Kansas City, Philadelphia offense, all right? I think they're still going to stay on that track. But I think he wants to eliminate the risk involved with Deshaun Watson's unique skill set. He doesn't want him to get hurt anymore. He doesn't want to put him in harm's way, period. All right, so I think you're still going to see the spread concept. You're still going to see the run-pass options, the RPOs, the traditional option, the play-action pass, the bunch formations from the air raids. You're still going to see a lot of misdirection, zone read. They're going to do a lot of boots and waggles to move the pocket. But I think now that they have the offensive line, after picking up 3 different linemen, offensive linemen in free agency, now that they've spent the money on the offensive line, they're going to utilize that to make the offense a little less risque for Deshaun Watson. It's basically going to limit his exposure in the offense. I think that's what he means about dramatically. Last year, he was exposed a lot, and now that he has an injury, his second ACL injury of his career, by the way, they don't want their franchise quarterback exposed. And I think they've talked about that. Like, he's going to be our franchise quarterback. We need him healthy, number one. So that's why you invest in the offensive line. And that, you know, the Texans had the third lowest payroll for the offensive line in the NFL last year. They were being too damn cheap on the offensive line. There are certain things you don't skimp on. Toilet paper, condoms, and offensive linemen. Especially if you've got a franchise quarterback. So they've learned that lesson. Now you got Deontay Foreman, who's going to end up starting by midseason, in my opinion. You got a deep threat in Will Fuller. DeAndre Hopkins can beat man-to-man. They still need to solve the tight end position, but I like the way that offense is shaping up. And so I wouldn't freak out about it. The reason they said they're going to change things, they're only changing things to make it a little bit less risky for Deshaun. All right, let's talk about baseball just for a second. So something the Astros are doing that's really interesting, and A.J. Hinch brought this up, that A.J. Hinch said they're going to use a 4-man outfield. At times, the Astros. They're going to use a 4-man outfield at times. And I want to say last year, we saw the Cubs experiment with a 4-man outfield. It could have been another team, but I'm pretty sure the Cubs actually used a 4-man outfield at one point, too. And the reason that I bring this up is because not because I'm sure other teams have used a 4-man outfield, but I love that the Astros are always on the cutting edge. They're always you know, trying their best to be ahead of the evolution of the game. That's why their style of play. Remember, it was a big thing now, at least it has become a big thing, to lead off, all right, your batting order with power. You remember, it used to be you wanted your leadoff man to be a fast guy that stole bases, could get on base, and could steal bases, all right, and manufacture bases for you. And now it's gotten to the point, and George Springer is a prime example of it, where, you know, baseball teams are leading off with the power, all right? They want to pop at the top of the lineup. George Springer led the Astros last year with 34 home runs. The Astros had, what, 238 home runs, second in Major League Baseball. 34 of them came from the guy that was batting leadoff for him a lot of time, the pop at the top. And even the Yankees have experimented with putting Aaron Judge in leadoff during the spring. All right, they put him at the leadoff a couple of times just to experiment with it and to see if it's something that, you know, that maybe he could do. He definitely can get on base, and he's athletic enough. So they're thinking outside the box all the time if you're the Astros. That's why I like – so even the launch point phenomenon that we brought up, how people are obsessed with getting up under the ball, Jose Altuve, the prime example of that. But those advanced metrics and sabermetrics have led them to the launch point revolution. And the Astros are one of the premier teams, or at least they're one of the teams that now acknowledge it but utilize it the most. The power, the pop at the top, obviously Astros are doing that too. That's something that's new. That's kind of outside the box. Now more teams are doing it. They're putting more power to lead off the lineup, but the Astros are one of the first to do it. And now you see this four-man outfield at times he says they're going to use, and I haven't seen the stats behind it, but to me, I'm sure it's something that's cutting edge and it's kind of taken over in its infancy right now. But I can see more and more teams starting to do it, especially with teams who are attacking. With the launch point phenomenon, teams are attacking those vacant areas in the outfield. And maybe at this point, they're trying to counter that. So that's why I think the Astros, in my opinion, they're basically what the Warriors were to the NBA when they first started their dynasty. I think they use a lot of cutting-edge concepts. They're very innovative. They're very creative. They're not afraid to embrace sabermetrics. And they have one of the most talented rosters that we've seen in recent years in Major League Baseball, in the last decade. And I think the Astros, I would compare them to the Warriors. And that's a good comparison if you're an Astros fan. But that's how, and I mean that from their ability to grasp new age concepts quickly. And not only that, but master them. Okay, we'll come back. We'll wrap it up, put it in the oven. We'll also get a little crosstalk going. This is the Rodcast right here on the Horn, 104.9 and AM 1260. All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. Time to get in a little crosstalk. How about this? Astros up 1-0 on the Rangers.
Boom.
And it was George Springer with a little pop at the top that got him the home run.
Nice.
It's a leadoff, so it's a beautiful thing. Man, how exciting is it that Major League Baseball has every team playing on opening day? How in the hell has that not happened since 1968?
I don't know.
But
it felt like it did as a kid because a lot of them played.
This is true.
But there was always that Sunday night game. And why not have every game on opening day? I love it.
I do, too. I think it's like an unofficial holiday. I talk to dads who are skipping, or at least have their sons skipping school so they can go to, you know, ballparks.
Yeah, I'm barely going to be here with you, and Chad has to deal with it for 3 hours.
You just had a baseball draft, right, for your fantasy team? How long was this draft, man?
I talked about it yesterday, and I think you're kind of the same way, the way you get nerdy with stuff, with sports stuff.
That rabbit hole, man.
That I think we kind of know ourselves at our age now,
mm-hmm.
And so I've stayed away from fantasy for 7 years, you know.
This is the first fantasy team in 7 years?
I'm the wino that stays away from wine bars, you know. I'm not even going to be around it. I won't put myself in the environment because I know I'm already going to geek out enough, right?
Sometimes we're going to need an intervention from you in like a year.
And I think we're going to have it, and it's going to be fantasy driven because Wags got me into it. You know, Wags is such a good dude.
Well, and Wags knows stuff to say no too. To. That's true. That's a good point.
And of course, I got into it and had a fun, you know, had a ball and. I'm on the phone with my dad, Bob Dunn, so we built pretty much a
you're getting
Cubs.
Like counsel from?
And he is just loving it because he's so excited about today. It was like a father-son moment that I owe to Wags.
You know what? Now that actually is pretty cool.
Yeah,
When you're old and get those good father-son moments, that's cool. Now that is cool. I have those rare with my dad now. I have those good father-son moments. You want more of those.
Now the good thing is you only set it once a week, too.
But your dad's kind of a nerd like you about this stuff, right?
Oh, God.
Yeah. Matter of fact, he's bigger nerd than you.
In with pro baseball, yes.
Okay, there you go.
And with pro baseball, he knows all these guys, and he's got these weird grudges. You know, he didn't want me to take Marwin Gonzalez, and I'm like, he's a Swiss Army knife. I heard you talking about Connor Williams.
There you go, yeah.
How is that a negative?
I don't know. It is now. Isn't it so weird that that's a negative?
That's been a positive in every sport I've known forever.
And now they want a reason to
in
knock
swimming,
him.
That's a positive.
Right? It's never a bad
it's
thing.
It's never a bad
to
thing.
To be versatile.
Yeah. He can play safety and corner. Oh, no.
Yeah. That's what it seems like, though, with Connor Williams.
That sounds good.
And Mel Kiper has mocked him
especially
out of the first
center,
round.
Because I think he can play that.
Mike Mayock thinks he can. Yeah.
Well, if Mike knows a lot more than I do.
No
so
question about it. Yeah,
I'll go with that.
Mel Kiper, because of that reason, people don't know where he's going to play. They mocked him, his latest mock, out of the first round. I'm like, are you serious? This thing is getting out of control.
Yeah.
But you know what I hope? I pray this. I hope he falls to the Patriots, who lost both of their starting tackles. Lost Solder. They lost Fleming. The Patriots, baby. Yes.
And you know what? And you know the whole thing with him. As long as he stays healthy, he's going to play at some position
for a long time in this league.
Make a ton of money.
Yeah, no doubt. He is. Yeah, so, I mean, that guy's going to be on a roster for 8 years or something like that.
But you also know that first round compared to second round early on is that's big.
Yeah, especially these days when you got the rookie wage scale.
Exactly.
Yeah, no question about it.
They start paying those rookies a little more.
No, I like the rookie wage scale. Yeah, it's all guaranteed, too. They get like...
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
So.
I don't mind a rookie wage scale. You know what I mean? I kind of like it. That's why...
Weird. You and I are on the opposite of that.
And you know, we can have a real nerd conversation. I don't like the rookie wage scale. I do.
Well, I do.
Nerddom. All right, I want to thank my man Brian for doing a great job at The Thing Radio. KD and Chad coming up next. Don't go anywhere. They're going to break it all down for you. I want to thank all
the
Texans.
The Cubs.
They've been great. Oh, yeah. Hey, and KD will be distracted. Remember, the revolution will not be televised. We'll be talking about it right here on the Ridecast. Happy opening day to everybody. Be safe. Love you guys. Peace.
Episode. Hey.